Since 1958, when John Diefenbaker delivered the largest majority in conservative history, consisting of some 204 seats in the House of Commons, the fortunes of the party in only 5 years descended to the point where, in 1963, Mr. Diefenbaker and his party were defeated, and again defeated in 1965. Since that time, there have been growing feelings in the party that it was time the old warrior retired and turned over the reins to a younger man. However, like Churchill and Adenauer before him, John Diefenbaker was simply not the type to give up easily. But as pressure mounted for his retirement, Diefenbaker loyalists such as Gordon Churchill found it necessary to come to the old man's defense.
There have been elements in the party opposed to Mr. Diefenbaker for the last 10 years. Every time they've raised their heads and expressed their opinion, they've been swamped by an avalanche of support for Mr. Diefenbaker. They haven't put forward any name. There are about 9 or 10 possible candidates for leadership in our party, but let the dissidents tell us right now what their choice is, and they haven't done it. It's just a nebulous thing. Throw out the present leader and pick somebody whose name we don't know, whose qualities of leadership have not yet been assessed. This is just nonsense and it's ridiculous. If there's to be a real challenge to leadership, somebody must emerge and boldly and courageously advance himself as a substitute for Mr. Diefenbaker, and then we'll make our choice.
It was obvious that this kind of suggestion made it impossible for anybody to come forward, because until there was a leadership convention, no man could challenge Mr. Diefenbaker. Finally, however, Mr. Dalton Camp, president of the Progressive Conservative Party, decided to put party above personalities when he publicly advocated the need for a leadership convention. Mr. Camp immediately found himself attacked by the old guard, who attempted to defeat him in his bid for re-election as president of the Progressive Conservative Party as an indirect way of warding off a leadership convention. In November 1966, at a convention in Ottawa, before the election for the presidency of the party, Mr. Camp courageously stated his position.
To be specific, I intend to support the vote of confidence in the national leader. But I intend to support the question that this annual meeting be asked for its advice as to whether or not it feels it's in the best interest of the party to have a convention late in the year of 1967 or at a time which common sense would indicate is prior to the next election.
The pro-Diefenbaker forces banked all their hopes in a test of strength to defeat Dalton Camp on Toronto lawyer Arthur Maloney, who, speaking before the vote was cast, took a page straight out of old John's script and attempted to win with an entirely emotional pitch.
I have no obligation to our national leader. I have no obligation to him whatsoever except one, which by reason, I suppose, of my Renfrew County upbringing is really to me terribly important. And that is the single obligation that we all owe, each and every one of us, to the man we picked as leader, loyalty and respect. Furthermore, when his day comes to lay down the burdens of leadership, to turn back the mantle we gave him 10 years ago, if I should happen to be the president, or if I have influence over him who is, he will do so in a blaze of glory.
But the Progressive Conservative delegates had had their fill of emotion. They wanted political reality for a change, and it was obvious that power and votes soon desert a dying king. As the convention room became hushed, the lady chairman stepped forward to announce the new president of the Progressive Conservative Party.
The national president of the Progressive Conservative Party of Canada is Dalton Camp.
And so, by 62 delegates' votes, the old guard was defeated and the Diefenbaker era came to the beginning of its end. Attempting to patch up the bitterness, Dalton Camp, representing a new breed of progressive conservatives, outlined his hopes for the future of the party.
I think the divisions and bitterness, so-called, in the party can be greatly magnified and exaggerated. There were divisions and bitternesses in the convention of 1966. There's nothing unique about that when there's a contest. There are divisions and bitternesses in every election. And yet when the provincial, federal, municipal, or whatever, when the votes are counted, people knit themselves together again, and we all set off on our common purposes and in a fairly good condition of unity, and I would expect the same of this party. Well, we aren't anywhere near that sort of consideration yet, and it certainly isn't paramount as any consideration in my mind. Let's talk about it without the rider. The direction I hope the Conservative Party will take is to so democratize its proceedings and so rejuvenate its organization that we can inject into this party some of the things that we're missing, which is more young people, which is more participation in the urban areas, which is more a better way of seeking the advice and counsel from the members of our party in regard to matters of policy, matters of organizational procedures, and so forth. This sounds like, I suppose, to someone outside the party, as a rather modest task, but to me it's an enormous task.
But a convention drama does not end with the sudden dropping of a curtain. Old warrior Diefenbaker still attempted to work his magic.
Those that want to go back to the days, the dinosaur days, those that want to go back. How many members did we have? Year after year. No, my friend, you earn your 50 cents if you keep up. They want to go back. What about the days of Bennett? What about the days of Bennett? That man who gave leadership to this nation and ended up with 39 seats because of division in the party among those in certain areas. I will stand so long as there is not available a leader who is not prepared to go forward in the future, but will stand behind reaction. And I want to make that clear. No leader can stand when he has to turn around every now and then to find out who's trying to trip him from behind. No leader can stand. No one. Oh, ladies and gentlemen. You know in your hearts that that's true. Oh, yes, you do. Oh, yes, you do. Oh, yes. You know that it's true, that no one can go forward unless behind him are men and women who will stand. The message to Canada tonight is this: unity in this party. We're going forward together. We're going to bury this evening not on us differences of opinion. In disputation and in discussion, there is strength. But we're going to bury this feeling that this party is so divided, that it cannot determine on its course. Ladies and gentlemen, won't you just go home and think about this? You are not hurting anybody but yourselves. You are not hurting anybody but yourselves. When you destroy the party from within, I said a moment ago,
I've had years in the service of this party in this country. Ah, my friend, your age allows you to say that because you don't know about your speech. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm asking you to unite. I'm in 100% agreement with what the president has said in these various speeches.
It was clear, particularly among delegates under 50, who represented a majority of the Canadian electorate, that the curtain was descending on the political career of John Diefenbaker. Yet, like an old Shakespearean actor, determined not to give up center stage without a fight, the following day he returned to the convention for some off-the-cuff remarks among the faithful.
We want John! We want John! We want John!
Honest Canadians are like you.
My friends, I deeply appreciate this. I came over without any advance notice, excepting I told a couple of friends that I wanted to come over and thank you for the support that you've given. I read in the press that the old magic is gone. I don't know how one could practice that with the trained. Would it be SEALs that stood in front of me the other night and were placed there in advance? We did not bring about the disunity in this party, and I want to underline that. And whatever, my party comes first, regardless of any circumstance. And this may be the last opportunity before you leave that I'll have the privilege of speaking to you. I am. Fight on, my men, quote Sir Richard Barton. I am wounded, but I am not slain. I lay me down and rest a while, and then I'll rise and fight again.
And so Mr. Diefenbaker walked away from the convention, and the banquet scheduled to close the convention was canceled. A leadership convention was then called by the Conservatives for September 1967 in Toronto, and it's not inconceivable that the old warrior will turn up once again to fight the good fight. As the year ended, on December 31st, 1966, standing on Parliament Hill to light the centennial flame to start Canada's 100th birthday celebrations, Prime Minister Lester Pearson, speaking for all Canadians, said,
"Tonight, 100 years later, on Parliament Hill in Canada's capital, with the lighting of this flame, and with pride in our present and faith in our future, we open officially our centennial celebrations. And as this symbolic flame burns, so may love of country burn in the hearts of all Canadians, where the real meaning of Canada must ever be found. If I may put it in the words of the Canadian poet Charles Bruce, this heap geography, what is the blend of fear, strength, song, and dream, slow burning in its heart? There is no answer but the wordless answer that live in flesh, in nerve, in heart, and blood, and bone. Tonight we let the world know that this is Canada's year in history. It is a time to measure with grateful hearts the achievements of our past. It is a time to face with confidence the test and the opportunity of the future. It is a time to assess our national condition with all its possibilities and its problems. It is a time to appreciate the honorable place we hold in the world community, gained by sacrifice in war and service in peace. We have become a great industrial power, one rich in resources and goods. This is not for boasting, but for thanksgiving. More important, we have built new dimensions of progress and welfare into the Canadian way of life. The boundaries of freedom and opportunity have been expanded for every Canadian. And out of our experience in nation building, we are forging a new principle of democracy, the principle of political and economic unity and cultural and social diversity. History and geography, man and the map, have made Canada a particular kind of community where we can show the unity and diversity that all mankind must find if we are to survive the perils of this nuclear age. Much has been done in Canada. Much remains to be done. We have laid a strong foundation on which to build in our second century. If we have the will and the goodwill, there is no limit to our progress. But without that will and goodwill, we can do little as a nation. It is my hope and my belief that as we continue to work out Canada's destiny, our national spirit and our national purpose will shine as this centennial flame now shines before us, steadily and strongly before all the world, as an example of what men and women working together can do to build a good society deep-rooted in the things that are righteous and are real. Tonight, we begin a new chapter in our country's history. Let the record of that chapter be one of cooperation and not conflict, of dedication and not division, of service, not self, a record of what we can give, not what we can get. So let us strive together as Canadians to make our country worthy of its honored past and deserving of a noble future. Que Dieu bénisse le Canada. God bless Canada.